Greetings, guide to emergency medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is December 10th, 2020, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Here We Go, Loop-de-Loop, to Treat Abscesses. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Kirsty Chalin. She is a consultant in emergency medicine and emergency medicine research lead at Lancashire Teaching Hospital Trust. She is also the chair of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine Women in Emergency Medicine Group and involved in the RCEM Public Health and Informatics Group. Kirsty is also the creator of the wonderful infographics called Paper and a Pick. Welcome back to the SGEM, Kirsty.
Hi, Ken. It's great to be back. It's been far too long.
Well, you have been part of the SGEM faculty for a number of years now, doing those infographics called Paper and a Pick. Remind the SGEMers, why did you start summarizing papers into a visual abstract?
So I started drawing in the first place when I was taking my FCHEM exam, which is like our board exams. And there were so many things to remember and so many mnemonics, I had to start drawing pictures to remember which mnemonic was for which list. And then when I finally passed the exam, I found I really missed the drawing. So I started working on representing a single paper in a picture. And the SGEM with its weekly structured critical appraisal seemed like a perfect fit for doing that.
I think it's been a wonderful fit. And we have a special page on the SGEM blog that lists all your past infographics. It's great to have you with us as our newest member of the SGEM Hot Off the Press team. You ready to go?
We're good.
Okay, give us a case.
So, a 52-year-old, previously healthy woman presents to your ED with an abscess on her left forearm. She's systemically well, and there's no sign of tracking, so you decide to perform incision and drainage in the ED. When you ask your nursing colleague to set up the equipment, he wants to know if you'll be using standard packing or a vessel loop drainage technique.
Well, we've covered the issue of abscesses multiple times in the SGEM. In fact, you can go back to season number one, all the way to 2012, 8 years ago, and we looked at packing after IND on SGEM number 13 and concluded, yeah, routine packing might not be necessary.
So I have to declare here that I have no skin or even abscess in the game, because here in the UK, very few EDs IND our own abscesses. We tend to leave that to our surgical colleagues. Another topic we covered on SGEM 156 was whether irrigating after IND was superior to not irrigating. And the bottom line from that critical appraisal was that irrigation is probably not necessary.
I think it's fascinating the different cultures that we have. So here in North America, and we have a extra special guest coming up because this is an SGEM hot off the press, so maybe he will address it. But here in Canada, I would be like, get this blank stare or this, dial tone, beep, if I called up my general surgeon and asked them to do an IND on a simple cutaneous abscess. So it's really fascinating that you don't do that technique. And this really points out one of the highlights of interpreting the literature, because here we have some data that we're going to go through, but how you clinically apply it. What's the thing I always say, Kirsty, about how you're going to apply something? What's the answer to an evidence-based medicine question?
The answer is always, it all depends.
It does, right? So it takes place in a context. There is the data, the evidence, the literature, which guides our care, informs our care, but it doesn't dictate our care, and we still need to use our clinical judgment. And so in my environment, it would be the emergency physician doing this procedure, not the general surgeon doing this procedure, and then, of course, engaging with the patient and asking them about their preferences and values. But let's get back to the show here, because that was a little sidebar. The use of antibiotics after IND is another treatment modality that's been debated over the years. The wonderful PA, Chip Lang, who has his own knowledge translation project called Total EM, and I interviewed Dr. David Tallon about his very good New England Journal of Medicine randomized control trial on SGEM 164. The bottom line from that episode was the addition of trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole to the treatment of uncomplicated cutaneous abscesses represents an opportunity for shared decision making.
However, one issue that's not been covered yet is about the loop technique, which is when one or multiple vessel loops are put through the abscess cavity by making a couple of small incisions. An advantage to this technique over packing, which isn't necessary, is that the vessel loops don't need to be changed or replaced. And we've got a picture of how to do it in the show notes.
And that picture came from the actual manuscript, and I'll also find a YouTube video for those who want to look up the technique. What's the clinical question?
In uncomplicated abscesses drained in the ED, does the loop technique reduce treatment failure?
And the reference?
Ladd et al. A randomized controlled trial of novel loop drainage technique versus drainage and packing in the treatment of skin abscesses. And that's from Academic Emergency Medicine out this December 2020.
So, Kirsty, that would make it what?
That would be hot off the press.
Hot off the press, indeed. All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Patients of any age undergoing ED drainage of skin abscesses.
So they excluded a number of patients with abscesses located on the foot, on the hand, or the face, or if they required admission and or operative intervention. What was the intervention?
The loop technique, where a vessel tie is left in situ.
And what did they compare it to?
Standard packing with sterile ribbon gauze.
Let's run through their outcomes. What was their primary outcome?
Treatment failure, which they defined as need for a further procedure or IV antibiotics or operative intervention, which was assessed at 36 hours.
And what were their secondary outcomes?
Ease of procedure from the point of view of the person doing the procedure, pain at the time of treatment from the point of view of the patient or the parent, ease of care at 36 hours, and pain at 36 hours.
Well, we've mentioned a few times this is a hot off the press episode, which means we are pleased to have the lead author on the show. Dr. Ladd is an active academic emergency physician working in Orlando Regional Medical Center, serving as a core faculty and senior associate program director. Jay also has the rank of professor of emergency medicine for the University of Central Florida College of Medicine. Welcome to the SGEM, Jay.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me for this episode.
So, Jay, we understand you've authored a number of research articles focusing on trauma and skin infections. What got you so interested in this area?
Well, I'm about to nerd out on you a little bit. I am an antimicrobial stewardship committee member, but that all started back in college. I was a microbiology major, and I'm fascinated with bacteria, viruses. You can imagine, despite the fact that COVID's been such a big topic, that too intrigues me. But the idea here was I got interested in bacteria and skin abscesses because it's a problem that a lot of our patients have. We see it all the time, right? 1 to 2 million visits in the U.S. alone. And it's something that we sort of, in the past, brutally attacked. We put people through a lot of pain just to cure them of this relatively minor disease. So I wanted to find better ways of taking care of these patients.
Jay, welcome to the Nerd Zone, because you're on the right podcast. Because we are uber nerds, and we love diving into the research, doing structured critical appraisals, and then delivering it to the SGEM audience for free, my favorite price, so patients get the best care based on the best evidence. So it's great to have you on the program, Jay, an expert like you, who it sounds like has had an interest in this area for years. So one of the things we do, Jay, is we get the authors themselves to read their conclusions before we start going through a checklist. So what were your conclusions, you and your colleagues' conclusions, for this study on the loop technique?
We found that the loop and packing techniques had similar failure rates for the treatment of subcutaneous abscesses in adults. Interestingly, we did find that we had significantly fewer failures in children. When we looked at pain and patient satisfaction, we had better results in patients using the loop technique.
All right, sit back, Jay. We're going to go through a checklist, some of the key results, and then we're going to bring you back. And I think you're going to like this. We're going to talk nerdy. So, Kirsty, let's go through the quality checklist. And there is my second favorite number, 11 questions to go through for randomized clinical trials. So the first question is, are these emergency department patients?
They are.
Were they adequately randomized?
Yes. Jay and his colleagues used an online randomization tool.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes, in sealed envelopes.
And the patients, were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
I'm not so sure about that. The information in Figure 2 in the manuscript seems to indicate it, but it's not explicitly stated.
And so this would be the intention to treat analysis. The fifth question, the study patients, were they recruited consecutively, i.e. no selection bias?
No. All the patients were screened when the researchers were available, and the researchers worked a range of shifts, but they couldn't be there all the time.
The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
They were.
Was everyone unaware of group allocation?
No, the patients, the clinicians, and the outcome assessors were unblinded, so they knew which group they were in.
Did they treat everybody equally except for the intervention, the loop technique versus the standard packing?
They did. The clinicians were allowed discretion in use of local anesthesia, sedation, and antibiotics, but the numbers of all of those were comparable across the two groups.
Was the follow-up complete?
Yes, it was. It was 89% and 92% in the two groups.
Do you think all patient-important outcomes were considered?
Yeah, I think they were.
And the last question, the 11th question. The treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, but kinda yes. Over the whole group, there wasn't a difference. There was a statistically significant difference found in the children, but this was found in a post hoc analysis, so we need to be careful with it.
Well, let's go through their key results. They recruited just over 250 participants into the trial, with just under 200, it was 196, having outcome data. The mean age was 22 years. 71% were also thought to have cellulitis. 83%, so 4 out of 5 patients received antibiotics at discharge, and more than 80% of those prescribed antibiotics were given the combination of cefalexin and trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. What was the key result, Kirsty?
That there was no statistical difference in treatment failure between the loop technique and packing.
Yeah, and that was their primary outcome. Treatment failure. And we defined that back in the PICO. So what were the actual numbers for treatment failures between the two groups?
So they were 20% in the group that received traditional packing versus 13% in the group treated with the loop technique.
And this was not statistically significant. How about the secondary outcomes? You did mention treatment failure in children.
Yeah, so in their subset of children, treatment failure was 21%, 1 in 5 in the packing group, but there weren't any treatment failures in the loop group.
And like you said, we need to be cautious about overinterpreting this subgroup analysis that was done post hoc. The other secondary outcomes were the ease and pain of procedure, and they were the same, but ease of care and pain over 36 hours and patient satisfaction at 10 days were improved in the loop group. And we'll put a table in the show notes that breaks down those secondary outcomes. All right, Jay, we're here. It's time to talk nerdy. And we have my favorite number of questions. That's right, 5, because I can count to it on one hand. So we want to better understand your research. So Kirsty and I will alternate back and forth, Jay, and hopefully you can respond to each of our nerdy questions. You good to go?
Yes, sir.
Kirsty, you've got question number 1.
So the study was conducted from March 2009 until April 2010. What happened in the meantime, and do you think the results are still valid today?
I'm absolutely guilty of something that many researchers do. I got very excited, got this through IRB. We wrote this up. We conducted this study. Albeit we did this study, we do a lot of things homegrown, meaning I don't have a team of researchers. I don't have statisticians. I don't have someone to write the IRB. It is myself, residents, Dr. Linda Papa, who is another faculty member. She's Canadian, by the way, of Ian Steele's sort of pedigree, as well as some medical students. So we really did this in a homegrown fashion. So by the time this was all done, I had a ton of data. I needed to go through it. I needed to write it up and publish it. That didn't get done in a very timely fashion. And honestly, my answer is we were running a residency. I got busy with a lot of things. I just put it on the back burner, and lo and behold, it's many years later and we're publishing this. I do think these results are totally valid even today. One, if you look at the care of abscesses, we've been, you know, treating abscesses for, you know, over 100 years. The mainstay has been cutting those things open, throwing something in there, whether it's ribbon gauze, some kind of a drain. I guess newer data is looking at not doing any of that, but it always boils back to getting the pus out of there and opening up the abscess. That still occurs today. And if you even look at some of the articles that have come out recently, there's an article in 2020, actually in Academic Emergency Medicine, that Gottlieb put out. There's a review article looking at the meta-analysis, really, looking at a number of these trials, and again, showed that loop had an odds ratio of 1.75 in favor of less failures. So I think these results are 100% applicable to this day.
I really like how you humanized the experience. You could have just said, you know why there was a 10-year delay? One word, life. Life gets busy. It gets challenging. There wasn't any nefarious thing in there. It was like, oh man, I have to do this all myself. I've got this, some homegrown team that I have, but I don't have the legend of emergency medicine. Ian Steele and his department working on this. And, you know, I've got to run a residency program at the same time. So totally get that. And I think you could have just said, you know what, Ken? It was life. It got in the way of the completion of this study. The second nerdy point we wanted to talk about, and we did mention it in the quality checklist, was convenient sample. You only recruited when research team members were available. And this is a common limitation we see in EM research. Did you manage to cover the whole working week, the 24/7, 365, which emergency medicine is known for to be for anyone, anytime, for anything?
Yes. And unfortunately, again, we didn't have a team that was sort of paid to do this. So fortunately, we run a residency that takes care of patients primarily in our pediatric trauma center as well as the adult trauma center. So one or more of us was on any given holiday, day of the week, hour of the day. So these patients were recruited at all times, depending on when they obviously presented.
Now, you did a subgroup analysis of the children. This wasn't pre-planned, and we need to consider it hypothesis generating. Why do you think they seem to have responded differently? And have you been in a position to try and confirm this result?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll answer the second part first. We haven't tried to confirm this result. The honest truth is, if you look at the initial studies that came out from like Torsades, 2010, a lot of those studies were done by pediatric surgeons, much like you experienced in the UK there. They were almost all done on pediatric patients and not adult patients. We published something in American Journal of Emergency Medicine 2015 that was a retrospective look, sort of. We had adopted this technique through one of our pediatric surgeons who happened to also be an author on one of the original papers, and started doing this in the early 2000s, to be honest. And so we published in 2015 data that was from right before this study, looking at about 250 patients, two-thirds of which had packing, one-third of which had the loop technique. It was retrospective, so understand those limitations. But again, in that study, we found about 10.5% failure rate with the packing versus 1.5% in the loop technique. I think the data that's out there already sort of pretty presentable that children do pretty well with this technique. We wanted to expand this to include all comers. Interestingly, we didn't limit people that had underlying disease, diabetes, had maybe systemic symptoms of infection like fever. Obviously, if they were getting admitted because they were septic, that was a different story. There's too many confounders to include those patients. Do I think they would have responded different, or why do I think they responded differently? To be honest, I think most fail, and this is me just conjecturing at this point, but I think with adults, a lot of the failures have to do with compliance. A lot of our adult patients don't do the things we ask of them. I think in the pediatric realm, especially the younger children, parents are usually very obedient when it comes to their child's care. Maybe not with themselves, but with their children. Children tend not to have a lot of the medical problems that adults have as well, skin conditions and so forth. But I think the bigger thing was there's a mechanical issue when you're dealing with children's abscesses, especially younger children. Most of the children had thigh and buttock abscesses. Those are terrible places. I have three children myself. If you put a packing into a wound that's in the diaper area, you know how long that's going to last, right? There's going to be urine, feces getting in there, the diaper's coming on and off. And even though I'm a physician, as a dad, I can barely put that diaper on, right? So trying to take that thing off and not pull the packing out is probably not a realistic expectation. Trying to give them a bath in a tub is not a really realistic expectation. The beauty of the loop is that thing stays tied in. It's waterproof. It doesn't cause any function. It's okay if it gets wet. You can change the diaper. You can clean up the baby. You can put it right back on. And you're back in business.
I think that's such a good illustration of why evidence-based medicine needs to involve the discussion with the patient as well as the paper, because it's all those practical things about how it actually affects our patient that makes such a difference.
The fourth thing we wanted to talk about was blinding, and we appreciate it can be difficult to blind the clinician and the patient to treatment allocation when we're talking about putting in a loop or packing. However, it would have been possible to blind the outcome assessor. The clinician could have removed the packing or the loop, and then the research assistant could have assessed the outcome, potentially blinded to the treatment modality.
That is true. We didn't think about that. I don't have a great answer for you on that one. I agree. We could have asked those questions after the fact. I do think in assessing for failure, there would have been no way to do that. Any experienced clinician in our facility would have been able to tell that a loop was placed by the two small incisions versus the larger incision that's usually required for the packing. But when you're talking about presenting the VAS scale to the patient or the parent, it could have been a secondary person doing that. For convenience sake, we didn't do that. But I think with the primary outcome, it would have been very difficult to blind us. We knew what they look like. And again, it would have been sort of difficult to do.
Yeah, it would have been another attempt to minimize that potential bias. But it may not have been possible in the end with the clinicians identifying that they had the loop technique, unless it was a research assistant without clinical experience. But then you need clinical experience to find out whether or not they had treatment failure. So it sort of goes around in a loop there.
Question number five. You compared the loop technique in this study to ribbon packing. And as we've mentioned, we have evidence that this isn't necessary. Have you considered investigating the loop technique versus no packing at all?
The simple answer to that is we wanted to compare this to the gold standard. When we were in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when the articles were coming out about CTA for PE, you compared it to things like VQ or angiography. There are two big articles that most people sort of pull up, Kessler's article in 2012 and O'Malley's in 2009. Both of those articles had about 50 patients in them. And if I don't want to break them down for you too much, but I'm not sure that data can be extrapolated across all patients, all comers. They definitely did what most MRSA and abscess loop or abscess studies do. They exclude patients, like I said, that have underlying disease, systemic symptoms. In fact, the O'Malley study, people that required sedation, or if the abscess was bigger than 5 centimeters, or should I say centimeters, Ken? In either case, while the no packing technique exists, and it probably is a reasonable thing in very small abscesses, I don't think it's a gold standard. In fact, if you look at Talon and Singer had a review article in New England Journal of Medicine back in 2014, they still quoted above 70% usage of packing in abscesses. There's a newer study that queried 450 practitioners. Over 90% said they still packed abscesses. So I still think the majority of emergency practitioners pack abscesses. And we're trying to change that. We really agree that packing isn't the way to go. I'm not sure that no packing is the way to go when you have something as simple as loop to do, though.
So since 2012 and the time that we did the SGEM number 13 on the evidence suggesting that packing wasn't necessary, I'm not routinely packing. It doesn't mean I will never put in something, but I'm not routinely doing it. Are you routinely doing it?
I'll be honest with you. We haven't packed a ton of abscesses since around this study time, even a little bit before that. What's interesting about this study, we even talked about this article, is we had, when we were randomizing people in our pediatric hospital, the loop had sort of become our go-to technique. You know, probably about 60% of the time, 40% were packing. 2 or 3 years later, packing became fairly obsolete. We pretty much loop every abscess. If it's really small, we may not do anything with it like you do. But the loop is so painless. The patient can remove it or the family member can remove it. It's a simple procedure. It makes very small incisions. You know, it makes total sense to use it. There's not a lot of cost to it. And in fact, if with our adult surgeons, on our adult side, it definitely was the secondary technique to packing. That's changed as well. But our general surgeons on the adult side have all gone to looping patients as well, even in the OR. So there has been a paradigm shift within our organization. And I think places that study this, I've discussed it with many authors that are studying this. That's a very common theme. Unfortunately, the vast majority of us out there aren't familiar with this, aren't comfortable with it, and don't apply this technique to their abscess care.
Well, this is one of the reasons we do the SGEM. This is why we have this knowledge translation project. We want to cut that knowledge translation window down, that KT window down, which we know can be longer than 10 years, to down to less than 1 year using the power of social media. So it's great that we have you on the program. We can reach tens of thousands of people with the podcast, and hopefully somebody will be listening and going, hey, why are we still packing here? Maybe we could be doing this loop technique. Jay, is there anything else you want to tell the SGEMers about your study before we move on?
No, I just appreciate the time on here and chatting about this. And if anyone has questions, I'm glad to try to answer them.
All right, well, now we're going to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
So we agree with the author's conclusions about failure rates in adults and pain and satisfaction overall. Based on this paper alone, we're more cautious about the reduced failure rate in children and think this has room for further exploration in the wider literature.
Kirsty, can you give an SGEM bottom line?
Consider putting a vessel loop in on your next uncomplicated abscess.
And can you resolve the case that you presented of the woman who came in with an abscess?
You ask your nurse to set up for the loop technique, and the patient leaves after the procedure with follow-up planned.
And so how are you going to take this and apply it clinically?
So I'm going to go back to my hospital and tell our general surgeons that using the loop technique can result in less pain and easier care for the patient in the 36 hours following IND.
Well, you're not going to tell your surgeons. You're going to have a conversation with your surgeons about, hey, I just read this paper about the loop technique. Are you guys familiar with it? Are you doing that? But what are you actually going to say at the patient's bedside to the patient?
I'm going to say that there are two techniques for draining an abscess which have similar failure rates, but leaving a small piece of rubber through the wound rather than filling it with cloth ribbon makes it more comfortable over the next 36 hours.
All right, it's time to announce the Keener Contest winner. Last week's winner was Matt Rundles. He is an EM physician from Cambridge, Ontario. And Matt knew that 3.2% of women over the age of 65, which works out to 1.9% of all people over the age of 65, present to the emergency department with dizziness or vertigo, according to the 2017 NAMPSI's database. I was surprised. I got multiple correct answers. I'm trying to make these questions harder, but the S-Jammers are just too smart. All right, Kirsty, do you have a question for us this week?
I do. What language does the word abscess come from? And why is it called that?
Hopefully, this will be a more challenging question for the S-Jammers. But if you know the answer, then just send me an email and put Keener in the subject line so I can find that email after. And the first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. But now it's your turn, S-Jammers. What do you think of this episode on the loop technique to treat abscesses in the ED? Tweet your comments and please use the hashtag SGEMHOP so we can track the activity. What questions do you have for Jay and his team? Ask them on the SGEM blog and Jay will respond on the SGEM blog to your questions and feedback. The best social media feedback will be published in Academic Emergency Medicine.
Also, don't forget those of you who are subscribers to Academic Emergency Medicine can head on over to the AEM homepage to get CME credit for this podcast and article, and we'll put the process on the blog.
Thank you, Jay, for coming on the SGEM and talking about your hot off the press publication.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I'm looking forward to doing more SGEM hops with you, Kirsty.
And you too, Ken. It's great to join the team.
And I suspect that you will produce a paper and a picture for this episode.
It's in production.
Now, I sent you a direct message recently. When I post these paper and a pictures to the Facebook page, I get like more than 10,000 hits. The last one got 17,500 hits just to the one picture. So thank you for being so helpful with regards to knowledge translation.
Well, that is quite terrifying that many people look at it. But if it helps with the KT and getting better care to our patients faster, that's great.
And to finish the show, Jay, we ask the guests to give the SGEM tagline, but it has to be in your thickest American accent. So if you could channel your Floridian accent and read the tagline.
Well, I grew up in Texas.
Okay, well, do a Texas accent for the tagline then.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on a Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time. Here we go, loop-de-loop, loop-de-loop, loop-de-loop.